Hello again, and welcome back to our series on Azure Resource Manager templates and how to build a lab environment using Azure Resource Manager templates. Now, as you may recall from part zero, I'm starting with zero because we're working with computers. Part zero was our introduction, and as part of our introduction, I actually launched the automation that built the lab environment. And as you see on the screen right now, right up here, we've actually completed that. Here's the integrated scripting environment in PowerShell. Here's the end result. In this window here, if I scroll down a little bit, I can see that we launched it. Looks like I had a task canceled. I have to look at that. It actually worked okay, but you see that the task actually only took 22 minutes to run, which actually is pretty quick for this. Usually it takes between 30 and 45 minutes, and it says it completed and what time it was completed. Now I can verify that it was completed successfully by actually going into the browser here, and this is the subscription where I actually launched this. And if I look at the resource groups, I'm going to find the resource group that I named with the ending of my initials, K-A-R, so R-G-A-Z lab, K-A-R. And if I drill into the resource group, this is the important and interesting part. All the resources that are a part of this are all listed here. And this is a longer list than we actually have room for in this pane, so I can actually drill into the full list of resources that are part of this resource group. And we'll see the types of resources we have here. They're all built for us automatically. And I will go through and show you in the infrastructure as code piece in the JSON template how these were all built. But I have some storage accounts. I've got a virtual network, and that virtual network in turn has an address range associated with it, as well as IP address ranges in subnets. I have public IP addresses that I've created, and I've associated those public IP addresses with NICs. So I have five NICs here. The reason I have five NICs and only four machines is that I've got one machine that needs two NICs. The edge machine needs to have two NICs. And then also, the machines themselves are here. So now I can drill into the resources on any one of these and actually find out more information about them. So for example, let's look at the domain controller's public IP address. And as you select something, as it does in the Azure portal, of course, it slides everything also off into the left, fills in the information about that, and you can see that this public address actually was assigned, so it has a public IP address and a DNS name that was uniquely assigned to it as well, and also the NIC that it's associated with. So that is actually another object in our resource group. And if I drill into the NIC, I can see that the NIC is associated with a particular internal address as well. So this networking subnet for the sake of this virtual machine that's using this NIC, and as well as the public IP address. So I can drill into the public IP address and I can see what NIC it's associated with it. I can go to the NIC and see what public IP address is it. You see what I'm getting at here? I can actually go on and on and on and on, which is kind of silly. But this kind of gives you an idea that you can actually drill into these resources and see what was created. Now that's great as far as this portal is concerned and all the different resources that are part of this resource group. But what I also really want to know is what succeeded with regard to the deployment. So if I click on this last deployment, succeeded, it brings me into the pieces that it completed successfully, as well as some that may still be running, or in the case of this, it actually did have an error, so we can actually drill down and see where the error is. Now, it created the virtual network, that succeeded, and that was completed first. Later on, it actually created a modified DNS for the sake of the virtual network. But importantly, this deployment of the virtual machines and all those resources, it must have had an error. So I can actually drill into this and see what the results were. And we'll see that we can see what the results were, and it still has a state of deploying. So it's, look at that, it actually is still running. So it's actually getting the lab files currently. That's one of the steps to be able to get the lab files, download them, install them, extract them. So there's an automation involved with that too. But it looks like the admin machine has joined the domain, the sync machine has joined the domain, the domain controller had created the domain in the domain controller and so on. And all the other resources that were created and established, okay. So let's talk about networking and look at the JSON proper. So I'm going to open up Visual Studio Code here. And again, don't be afraid. I know you're all IT pros and this code stuff is maybe a little bit foreign to you. But I want to just kind of talk about the basics of JSON. So I'm going to go to the top of this document here. This document is called azuredeploy.json. And it's kind of the standard name for the sake of kind of the top level building of a deployment using a JSON template for the sake of Azure Resource Manager and building Azure resources. And you'll notice that there's various sections, and it's all bracketed off. So this syntax is something you kind of got to get used to. Typically, there's brackets that surround various areas. There's commas separating items in there. There's groupings of resources using braces, and so on. But the main areas of a JSON template file are these three, plus you can also have extensions added at the end. But the three main ones here, other than the schema definition, are the parameters, which are kind of fill-in-the-blank variables in the sense that you can actually change those values prior to running the script properly. So a parameter can be kind of fed into the script in order to set a particular value. For example, I have parameters for something like location. So where in the world do I want this to be run? Now you may have remembered that when we launched this, we only had a choice of East and West US, but that is a value that is allowed in this list. Of a certain type, and we can also add a description to this as well. Similarly with the DNS name and so on. Now again, these parameters, I'm not going to go into all the details of these. You can look at the script and find these, but the parameters are an important part of a JSON template, and in the lab itself, in lab number one, you'll actually learn much more about this. We also have variables. Now variables are kind of like parameters in the sense that they represent some value later on when the script is actually applying your configuration. Now you notice I didn't say executing your configuration. JSON templates are kind of a declarative language, not so much a structured iterative language where it runs this. But in a sense, the engine is able to interpret what needs to be built instead of going step by step. And that's a huge benefit. While I'm on that subject, let me just say, I could do this all in PowerShell, but PowerShell goes this. JSON allows you to say, do it all. If there's no dependencies, then just do it all at the same time. Now, of course, I can't create a virtual machine until the storage is created to host that virtual machine's hard disk. So the virtual machine declaration says, depends on a particular storage account to be in place. Once that's there, then it can run. But if there are no dependencies, or if those dependencies have all been met, there's no reason why things can happen all in parallel, which makes JSON deployment of resources in Azure using this JSON template, using ARM templates, so much more efficient, so much more rapid. I mean, you can really be deploying thousands of resources all at once versus the PowerShell this. So we talked about parameters. And again, very high level in this case. You'll investigate this further. Let's talk about variables. Like parameters, again, they represent some value. So for example, let's find one here. My DC public IP address name. Well, I'm calling that DC public IP. And later on, and of course, in Azure, you can actually look and see what the name of that particular resource is. Now, where is that variable being used? Well, down in the resources is where we're actually creating the objects. So here's that public IP address, and here's that DC PIP name variable being applied to the name parameter for this particular resource. This resource is called network, or microsoft.network/public-ip-addresses. And it's got an API version variable as well. And then it's got the resource group location. So I'm pulling from the resource group itself. Where in the world is this resource group deployed? Well, that's the same place that this public IP address object is going to be created. Additional properties about the object and so on being declared here. Now, again, I'm not going to go all through every single little bit of the syntax in this video series because these examples are all out there. I showed you in part one where the Azure Resource Manager templates can be found and how easy they are to use them and reuse them in order to build resources. So I have a public IP address for the domain controller, public IP address for the admin machine, for the edge machine, and for the sync machine. So that's the public IP addresses. So what about things such as storage accounts? Well, there's a storage accounts. So I'm creating these storage accounts also as a part of this. I wanted a different storage account for each of the machines. And in fact, I'm getting the storage account name from a variable. Now, how did I create that variable? Well, let's go up and find it. I actually kind of randomized by creating a unique string, and adding the name of the virtual machine, because that virtual machine name is also defined in a variable. And so I have a DC storage account name that was kind of a randomly long name, but it has to be random because it's, or it has to be unique, globally unique, because that is, after all, in the end, a URL. And I'm basing it off of the name of the machine as well, so we can easily find it when we look in the Azure portal and look at the storage accounts that have been created. So that's how that variable was built, and then that variable later then used when we actually build the storage account. Similarly, for the storage account for the admin machine, for the edge machine, as well as the sync machine. Then the virtual network. Now, a virtual network, it represents a couple of things. It represents a range of addresses in total, and it also then is able to host subnets, and it's into subnets that your virtual machines will apply, and the virtual machine subnet based on the NIC that's created. But you'll see here, I'm creating a virtual network, and it's got a URI for the sake of a template. Now, the reason I have this URI, this template link, is that this is where the deployment is actually kind of nesting another deployment in. So this template URI is actually in another file. If I extend this out, notice I've got a VNet JSON. This is actually another JSON file that builds my network for me. So it builds the address range, builds the subnets, and so on. So what I end up doing is kind of an interesting trick, but you have this ability to do this in JSON, where you can actually, if you want to, provision resources as part of another resource. And what's nice about that is I can use this definition of creating a virtual network multiple times in different places, and all I have to do is refer to it. So rather than embedding the entire set of code into the original Azure deploy.json, now I've got a separate piece, and I can actually build with building blocks much more complex environments. And this is just an example of doing that. Back in my Azure Deploy JSON, it's sending parameters into this. So remember we talked about parameters being kind of the fill-in-the-blank variables for the sake of running a script? Well, this has parameters that are being passed to the vnet.json. We have network interfaces. So these are the NICs. And again, I'm getting their names from a name that is in a variable. So their DC nickname has actually been defined as a variable, and that's being used for the creation of the name of the NIC. The location's coming from the resource group. It's got a display name as well. Now notice here's our first example, one example of the depends on. So I can actually say this, well, and this is actually enforcing the fact that this network interface can't be created until the deployment, the virtual network has been created, as well as the public IP that for this particular machine has been created. So the public IP address, as well as the network, need to be in place wholly before I can actually create the network interface, because then the one's going to associate with the other. So that will mean this will wait until that's done, and when it's done, then it'll actually build. And there's additional configuration that you'll define for this. The public IP address, so it's pulling that and associate the public IP address object with this particular NIC, as well as what subnet this NIC should be associated with. Again, that's the reasons for this depends upon. One has to be there before the other can be used and actually associated with it, so that's where that link comes in. Notice I'm also creating another network interface for the edge machine. In fact, I'm actually creating two NICs for the edge machine, because the edge machine is multi-homed, and there's going to be two NICs, one representing an outside connection, one representing the local network connection, and that's going to be kind of the router for the virtual private network that we're building in the lab. NIC for, or virtual network interface for the admin machine, as well as the edge machine, as well as the sync machine. All right, and now, and once we're done with the NICs, so what do? We built the public IP addresses, the storage, the virtual network, the NICs associated then with the virtual network, associated with the subnet that they're part, can be connected to. And now I'm at the point where I'm creating the virtual machines. So I'm going to leave it at that, and we're going to actually talk about the machine creation in our next part here. But I just wanted to show you kind of a quick introduction to the main building blocks of JSON. There's actually one more that I should show you, and that is, I talked about the parameters. We can have actually a parameters file that can enforce that those values. So if I wanted to say that these are the parameters that I'm going to feed into the actual execution, I could actually point to this parameters file as where it's coming from. And as you may recall, when I launched this automation, I didn't really actually show you where that was launched, but if I, in fact, this is a good opportunity to just kind of walk you through this as well. This script logged me into Azure. It grabbed my initials once I was logged in. It asked where in the world I wanted to put this, so it prompted for East US or West US. It populated some variables, and notice one of these variables is an asset location, which is actually in Git. So in GitHub, I've got my repository, and that's the same repository that you can go to and look at these files there. But it pulled, well, filled in a variable with that path, and then used Azure Deploy JSON as the actual template file that is executed when we're building those resources. Now, one thing I could do is I could actually use only, well, so notice this little comment here, only if you want to use Kevin's defaults, not recommended. I could also use the parameter file as a fill in the blank. If you wanted to take these files, put them in your own repository, or even put them locally, because you don't have to use a URI, you could actually use a file path as well as another option when you're building a resource group and Azure Resource Manager template. You could actually do that as another option. And I've got examples at the bottom of the script on how you do that. But for my case, I actually did not use the parameter file that was in the in the GitHub repository, and I instead created a parameter object, and I'll show you that in a second. But other things I did here, I filled in some variables on the machine names. I got a unique name for the DNS name for the machine. And I did that by detecting whether or not the name was already in use. And so there's some iteration there. And then finally, the creation of the parameter object. So notice I set a location. That's one of the parameters. I set the name of the virtual machines. I also set the size of the virtual machines. And these are all in the parameters in the Azure Deploy.json file. These are the ones that are expected. But I'm filling in the blank here. The size, of course, being important, standard D1 is a one-core machine with one NIC, but the Edge machine actually needs two NICs, and so it had to be a standard D2. Now, that's another reminder for those of you that are thinking about doing this with the Azure trial account. The trial, the 30-day trial that we give you, $200 worth of Azure for 30 days, whichever comes first, it's a limited trial in the sense that, in many senses, one sense being that there's only four cores that you can use. Well, a D2 has two cores, a D1 has one core. But notice I'm already up to five cores. If I was to actually deploy all four of these machines, I couldn't actually succeed in an Azure trial. So be aware of that. You might want to do some editing of this, maybe create just a couple of these machines that are required for the labs. In fact, Lab 1 and Lab 2 really only require the admin machine. Lab 3 would require the DC and the Edge machine. So you could actually get around it by not creating all the machines all at once for the labs. Or if you have an account that is already pay-as-you-go or a business subscription, then you go ahead. By all means, build the whole lab environment. And just make sure you shut your machines down when you're done so you don't eat up those compute hours. But it's filling in variables on the size, the domain that's being created in the domain controller, and so on. These are all values that are part of this parameter object. So the parameter object, then, is going to be used when I actually build the resource group. So I create or build the resources in the resource group. The first thing I do is build the resource group. That's part of this command here. I'm going to put a little information on the screen about when we're starting and launching this deployment. And then I'm doing a measure command in order to get the end result being the timing that it took to actually complete, which is kind of a nice little thing to wrap around a command to see how long exactly it took to run. But this is the heart of the command itself. New Azure RM resource group deployment, giving it the resource group name, the path, the template URI, which is the path at GitHub up online to actually pull down that JSON deploy or Azure deploy JSON. And then the parameter object that we just populated above. So that's where all the work's done. Once it's done, I get the little note saying completed at, and there's what we see here. Now, at some point, if you wanted to use my default parameters, again, there's an example if using instead of the parameter object, where you're actually using the parameter URI. I've got some other interesting things you could do as well. At the end of this deployment, if you wanted to shut down all the machines, I can actually run this command. Let's make that a little bit more readable. to get all the virtual machines in this resource group and then stop them. Well, that's good. I can actually force them to shut down nicely. And the best thing about that is not only are they stopped, but they're also deallocated so that the compute hours are not being accrued while I'm off somewhere else or sleeping or not working on the labs at any given time. Later on, if I wanted to start them all up again, I've got another command here that's the equivalent of that or the opposite of that in the sense that it starts all the virtual machines that are associated with that resource group. So something else to also use. And if you wanted to delete everything, just delete all the resources in their entirety, I could also run a command here, remove Azure resource, Azure RM resource group, and force it. And that would actually just quickly delete, well, not so quickly, but after a number of minutes, delete the resource group and everything inside of it, which is great because there was, as you saw, a lot of resources there. One other note too, if you wanted to clean out a resource group, simply going to the resource groups, selecting the resource group, and notice one of the options you have is to delete it as well. Now, you're deleting a lot of things, so it's giving you a quick check to see, are you sure you want to do this? And that means I'm going to have to put this name into this field, and then delete will open up. Well, I'm not going to do that right now, but that is how you would then in the Azure portal to delete a resource group. So that's where we're at now with this. Walk you through some of the basics of JSON and working with Azure Resource Manager templates. We talked about the schema, the parameters, the variables, as well as the resources. I walked you through some of those resources. Again, we're not going to go into every detail of the syntax on how this works. That documentation is all online, and certainly the purpose of the labs themselves later on is to walk you through with even more detail for that. But I'm really just, in this case, showing you how I began to provision the resources that were required in order to make the lab environment work for the labs themselves. Well, I hope you found this useful. In our next episode, it was going to be part two, so that'll be the third part, remember, counting by zero, starting with zero. Part two will be creating the domain controller. How did I do that? Once I built this virtual machine, how did I then automate the building of a domain controller? And you'll see I actually used an example that I found online in the Azure Resource Manager templates in order to make that happen. So again, hope you found this useful, and we'll see you on the next one.